Have your say. 1300 872 911. Macca's Talking Cairns. Classic hits. 846 4CA.
Well, breathtaking developments. All three eastern states yesterday. Victoria, and of course, the calls are out now for the Premier down there to step down after his senior public servant resigned in New South Wales. Absolutely astounding developments there with the Premier, Berejiklian. And now you come to Queensland. This has just emerged seemingly this morning. Queensland opposition leader Deb Frecklington's been referred to the state election watchdog by her own party. The LNP referred Ms. Frecklington over concerns a series of fundraising events could have violated laws aimed at curbing the political influence of property developers. It goes on to say the internal party crisis comes just weeks before Queenslanders head to the polls, where Ms. Frecklington is vying with Anastasia Palaszczuk to become the state's premier. Amazing developments. I've got Dr. Paul Williams on the line, senior lecturer of politics and journalism, Griffith University. G'day, Paul.
Good morning, John.
Let's go to Queensland first. This is just astounding information. How damaging could this be?
Well, if this is pretty damaging. This is about as, I won't say as bad as it gets, but it's certainly in that ballpark. You know, Queenslanders absolutely loathe politician self-interest. They absolutely loathe any whiff of political wrongdoing, scandal. You know, we're very sensitive in the post-Fitzgerald years to this sort of thing, and Queenslanders just won't tolerate it. So this is a huge development for the LNP, just as they were getting traction. They had a tough first week as well, but certainly they had the, you know, going back about 6 weeks, they had Labor on the ropes. You know, Deb Frecklington's had a spring in her step. They announced some big ticket policies, such as the Bruce Highway upgrade, the irrigation of Western Queensland, etc. And now, even if there's nothing in this, the mere fact that we're talking about it for the next few days is going to rob Deb Frecklington and the LNP of valuable momentum. Interestingly, the LNP this morning denies that they referred Ms. Frecklington to the Electoral Commission of Queensland. They're saying the ABC story is wrong.
Oh.
So it's now a matter of he said, she said.
Oh, okay.
So we just have to wait. We just don't know the truth. So we're going to see, I believe Deb Frecklington's going to make a statement to the media today. And so we'll find out exactly what's going on. And the Electoral Commission itself has not denied nor confirmed, my understanding is, that Deb Frecklington's under investigation. So it's all very murky. We don't know. But say, even if this all blows over by, you know, by the end of the week, it's still a valuable few days that the LNP has lost. So it's a very bad look.
Very interesting indeed. Although with the LNP having denied the truth of the ABC story, that might have lead to a totally different outcome. Because if it had come from Labor, the accusations, people would have taken it with a grain of salt. But if indeed it's come from within her own party, it's potentially catastrophic.
Indeed. In the short term, it will be catastrophic, but in the long term, it's always a good thing if parties find that someone in their ranks is doing the wrong thing. It's much better to get ahead of the story and refer alleged wrongdoers to the authorities rather than be caught out later trying to defend them. So maybe the LNP is playing the long game, but of course, when it's your own very own leader and you're weeks out from an election, from the election itself, it doesn't get much more damaging than that.
Let me cut to the chase with this one too. I won't go through the whole detail, but Anastasia Palaszczuk's public decree she won't include Jackie Trad in cabinet sparked an internal brawl with an influential Labor power broker declaring the Premier doesn't have the power. Look, I won't come on with all the details because we've got here. She's insisted her decision was final regardless of whether Ms. Trad was nominated for cabinet to replace Coralie O'Rourke by powerful left faction. I won't come on with the details. Tell me about the potency of this so-called left faction and what are they up to here?
Well, the left, as we all know, has been the dominant faction or near-dominant faction of Labor since the 2015 election. You know, the Labor right, or one of the two right factions, there are two right-wing factions in Queensland, a big one, headed by Cameron Dick, the AWU-aligned Labor Forum and the much smaller Old Guard, or Labor Unity, which was headed by the outgoing member for Ashgrove, or formerly Ashgrove, Kate Jones, and so together the Old Guard, the small right wing faction, has supported the dominant left faction, which has got almost half the caucus seats, and therefore gets almost half the cabinet ministers, because the socialist left or the left was very good at rounding and getting candidates pre-selected and organised and in the field, and they won a huge number of seats unexpectedly in 2015. So that's for the first time in decades since the 1970s, really the left has been in control of the Queensland Labor Party. And of course that's really coloured the first two Palaszczuk governments, and listeners would know that, you know, a big criticism of the Palaszczuk government is that it's got a lot of social policy reforms on the board, everything from taking, you know, expunging homosexual convictions to abortion law reform, etc. But the criticism has it hasn't got enough economic runs on the board. And so this has been a major problem for Anastasia Palaszczuk, who herself is a member of the AWU, in trying to present herself as an economic, strong economic manager. Now, this seems to be continuing. Now, the left may not have control after the next election. The left loses seats, it loses some left-wing seats. That means their numbers will diminish in the caucus, and therefore their numbers will diminish around the cabinet table. So it's yet to be seen. But the idea that a premier in the modern day and age in Westminster democracy is not responsible for cabinet making is really not true. You know, years ago, not so long ago, in the pre-Rudd days, Labor premiers and prime ministers had to make their cabinet because in terms of the votes that the factions cast. But today, the premiers and prime ministers have much more say, and the Labor Party has become a very leader-centric party. But that's not to say that left-wing unions, if they feel that they've been dudded at the cabinet table, won't kick up a stink in public. And that's what I think the left is saying here. If you don't give us what we want, we'll kick up a stink in public. And we already know that the left is divided in Queensland. The left is divided over whether Jackie Trad should have stayed or should have gone. The left is divided over whether the jobs from Adani outweigh the environmental issues. So, you know, it's a very murky set of affairs.
Now to New South Wales, these breathtaking developments with the Premier there, Gladys Berejiklian. Her future, it says the Courier Mail, hangs by a thread after the exposure over her years-long relationship with disgraced former Member of Parliament Darryl Maguire, who's at the centre of a corruption probe. Now, this press event yesterday, I've never seen anything quite so breathtaking. I mean, she was very composed, she was very impressive, etc. And just an hour or so later, I heard the replay of a very embarrassing telephone conversation between her and Maguire, in which she seemed to intimate that, oh, you'd better not tell me the details of that, or you need not tell me about that. And that, to me, sounded very, very suspicious. What are your thoughts on these developments? Can she survive?
Yeah, I felt exactly the same way when I heard that. On the surface of it, John, you know, she gave a very heartfelt and emotional and looked like humble and honest appraisal. And I dare say she is a woman of integrity. She has been a good Premier of New South Wales. She has handled, for the most part, there's probably problems around the Ruby Princess, but she's handled her COVID problem quite well. And she's been a popular Premier. And I would have suspected, and I think there's already some evidence for this, that it has been well received. She's found, you know, voters have reached out to her and offered their support, particularly among women, I suppose. You know, women can relate about you know, falling in love with a guy who's not in their best interest. So that's in that sense, you would think it's recoverable. But as you say, as these conversations and perhaps later text messages emerge about that Ms. Berejiklian had information that she should have perhaps made public before, or distance herself from the gentleman earlier, that sort of thing is unsustainable because it won't pass the ICAC test.
Yes.
The ICAC, of course, is New South Wales' equivalent of our CCC. And that's the bottom line. New South Wales has been subject to previous corrupt governments. New South Wales voters also hate self-interested politicians.
I want to take you to the story on the opposite page to Victoria now, and it says here, Labor members of Parliament have turned on Premier Daniel Andrews, with some calling for him to stand aside following the resignation of his top bureaucrat, Chris Eccles. Look, we know about this business from the news coverage all day yesterday. Fundamentally, this comes after those who gave evidence at the inquiry said they couldn't remember who made the decision to use private security, but a timeline provided by Victoria Police said this Mr. Ashton received the call informing him between 1:16 p.m. and 1:22 p.m. March 27. And Daniel Andrews said he was, quote, shocked to hear the call had been made. The members of his own party aren't at all impressed by his response here. Could he be on the way out?
It's looking increasingly shaky with each passing week, with each passing day. It's looking more and more difficult to how Daniel Andrews can take the Labor Party's next election. Not to say he won't, but again, as you say, he's looking like damaged goods. And look, the Labor Party could easily survive this, and it could, if it has, again, like the Queensland government's trying to do, like the federal government has done, offer a blueprint of economic recovery. The Labor government could recover from this, but I think most people would agree that their chances of recovery would be better without Daniel Andrews at the helm. So I think it's looking increasingly unlikely that Daniel Andrews will hang around for the long term. I think he's going to hang around for the very short term, but I think when things start to improve and Victoria comes out of its restrictions and it starts looking at getting people back into the workforce, getting the kids back into schools and opening the society up wholly, and if Labor's opinion polls are not up, that's when you'll see Daniel Andrews go.
Just quickly, I had given these people publicity, but it was a dreadful display we saw on our television screens last night. The Prime Minister had to be escorted from the University of Queensland in a police car in dramatic scenes after his own car was vandalised by refugee protesters who claimed they were glad he felt afraid. I thought this was a dreadful, dreadful business, a dreadful melee, the foul language, etc. And the fact that the level of protection around the Prime Minister seemed for quite a few moments there to be inadequate.
Yes, I thought the same. I thought that was a rather sparse contingent going onto any university campus of any politician. You know, you'd have to be careful. Or any place where there might be protest. But yeah, again, just from, I teach political PR, John, and from that standpoint alone, I mean, the protesters' tactics are very, very poor, and not only poor taste, but poorly executed, but just don't make any sense. The idea of that sort of political protest should be to garner public support for one's cause, and they did exactly the opposite. So, you know, it's but counterproductive. As Anastasia Palaszczuk said, it was totally disrespectful, and didn't do anything to advance their cause, and just made everyone feel uncomfortable. So, it was a rather regretful incursion into a state election campaign.
Now, just before you go, this is across page one of The Australian today. It says, Australians are running out of patience with state-imposed border closures and strict lockdowns, with almost half of all voters now claiming governments are moving too slowly and causing unnecessary damage to the economy and mental health. Now, it says in July, 76% of voters nationally claim to be most concerned about governments moving too quickly to relax COVID-19 restrictions. That number has now fallen to 54%. This is an interesting development just a few weeks out from the state election.
Yeah, not unexpected, as we see COVID community transmission drop to virtually zero, or indeed zero, and the odd patient that we have in Queensland is often perhaps from an overseas ship and they're already in quarantine. So, of course, people are going to be saying, well, it's time to open the borders. I think the Palaszczuk government, and yes, this still has potential to damage the Palaszczuk government, but I think less so than even a few weeks ago for a couple of reasons. One, we're in the official campaign period, and pre-poll voting starts next week. So it's like the end goal for voters is in sight. So they no longer feel on tenterhooks. They no longer feel in suspension. And second of all, that the Palaszczuk government is aware of this, and they've, in piecemeal, they're relaxing border restrictions with New South Wales. But again, for small business on the Gold Coast or in parts of Brisbane and tourism spots in North Queensland, of course, it needs to be redressed more frequently. But again, I'm now wondering, given that we saw that strong YouGov poll last week where we saw Labor surge 5 points,
yes.
I'm beginning to think that the strong leadership and the economic plan variables in people's minds will probably outweigh the border closures.
This has been very interesting indeed, Paul. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Dr. Paul Williams, he's the senior lecturer in politics and journalism at Griffith University.